Hello, everybody. This is Tiffany Carlson, and you are listening to No Free Rides, a lifestyle podcast on issues pertaining to life with a disability. No Free Rides is sponsored by EasyStand.com, manufacturing sit-stand technology for over 20 years. Today is June 29th, 2011, and we're back with a brand new show for all of you today. Super excited about today's show. I know I always say that because, hey, I pick awesome guests, and today's guest is pretty awesome. We have back on the show the talented Drew Bates. He is a voiceover actor and storyteller who was paralyzed in 2007, and he's also the mind behind Redneck Ninjas, which is a very funny cartoon, which hopefully will be coming soon to Cartoon Network. We'll discuss animation, dating with a disability, losing a parent when you have a spinal cord injury, and much, much more. But first, it's been over a month since I did a show. So I know when I last left all of you, I was really excited for my upcoming road trip, and that was a huge success. And when you use a power wheelchair and you're doing a road trip in a minivan, it can be quite the, you need to pack a lot, and it's a lot of stress traveling. You have to do packing several days before. Can't forget the wheelchair charger, of course, because you'll be screwed. It's kind of stressful, but I made a really good to-do list, which I always say, of course, is like totally essential whenever you have a disability and you plan on traveling. Make a separate medical pack list and then a regular pack list. That's what I do. But the trip, we went on a road trip from Minneapolis to Denver, Colorado to see this really cool indie band called Dispatch. And you might not know who they are. They're a pretty underground band. They've been around for many, many years, and they're a trio of three guys from Boston, and they play all the different instruments, and they change who gets to sing for the various songs. Very cool band. So we drove out there to see them at the famous Red Rocks Amphitheater, which is extremely wheelchair accessible and by far the most wheelchair accessible venue I've ever been to. The front row is where they put the wheelchairs, actually. If you call Red Rocks and go, hey, so-and-so is coming and I need a wheelchair accessible seat, they'll tell you you can either sit the front row or the top row, which is the 70th row. So if you're lucky, like I was, my band didn't charge more for the first row versus the 70th row, because that's how cool the band is. And so not only was the front row wheelchair accessible, the stage is at the same level as you. So it really feels like you're in a living room just watching some guys jam out, and then you kind of forget you're in this huge stadium until you look over behind you. It's a fabulous venue. If you're in Colorado or been thinking about going there to this venue, it's called Red Rocks Amphitheater, you absolutely need to go. Every wheelchair user that loves music has to experience a concert there. It's dynamite. Loved it. And another thing I learned I wanted to mention while I was on our road trip is that, you know, my air conditioning in my van stopped working. And when you're paralyzed, you can't sweat, right? It's really hard. So we had quite the adventure trying to keep me cool using a spray bottle, bottles of water pouring over my head, and then sticking my head out the window to mimic what the sweat would do if I could sweat on my brow and upper body. I went through so many bottles of water, it's not even funny. But it totally worked, and I was driving about 14 hours a day in 90 degree heat. So it's not easy when you're paralyzed to do that, but I manage, and it's all about just keeping your body wet at all times when you're trying to stay cool out in the sun. And also, another thing that saved my butt were books on CD. You know, you can get them for free, loan them out, you know, from any public library. And if you have a good public library near you, they should have a pretty good selection of books on CD. You can get anything from nonfiction guides, like we got A Guide to Wine, which was really interesting, or you can get a short stories of like horror stories or something to really kind of engage you and to kind of keep your mind from the multiple cornfields that you've been driving by for the last 6 hours. So maybe you know these tricks already, but maybe you don't. So check it out if you don't. Books on CD are saviors for the road trips. And also another cool thing that happened to me while I was in Denver, which I don't know if you have, when you have a disability and you travel, you know, do you try to make a point to meet new friends in cities that you've met from online? And then when you actually finally get to their city, you definitely want to meet them in person. And so that is what I did. I met a really cool guy named Nick Pierce, who was a MMA fighter in the UFC, and he was paralyzed about 15 months ago in training. His name when he fought was Nick the Bulldog Pierce, and he's awesome. And we met online, and it was really exciting because I got to meet him in person. He took us out to a really cool brewery, and it's sad, you know, of course, when you see someone that was really athletic that now is paralyzed, but he's doing really good, and he's interviewing, I'm sorry, not interviewing, he's teaching little kids in wheelchairs how to play quad rugby. And I think for a guy like who's paralyzed for a while, who lived a very strong, able-bodied life and now can't, I think one of the most enriching things you can do is to teach kids. And so I'm really glad that he's doing that. And I also met this crazy incomplete quadriplegic named Matt. I'm not going to tell you his last name, but he is so incomplete, you know, that he can walk a little bit. And oh man, the stories, the funny stories he had to tell us being an incomplete quad, very incomplete quad, and how he can screw with people's minds. Oh, it's so therapeutic to meet other people in wheelchairs when you're traveling, you know, that can totally relate to you and have your similar disability, you know. I love doing it, and it was like probably one of the highlights of our road trip, so I'm really glad we did it. So just one moment, you guys, and we'll have Drew Bates on the show in a few seconds. Hey everybody, so I'm super excited to have Drew Bates back on the program. He was here, I interviewed him, I don't even know how long ago, but it was several, at least like a year and a half ago. So, and Drew is really, really, really talented when it comes to using his voice, and that, and I mean he's a voiceover actor, and he's much more than that, but to me, I always had this like interest as a child for people that made like the voices behind the cartoons, and so anyone that's good with their voice, I always think that's really interesting. So, but anyways, we have him back on the show today because he's going to be talking about developments with one of his really cool animation projects that he's working on, and we're also going to talk about some dating challenges that we all run into if we have a disability. I'm sure you have, don't tell me you haven't. And also, we're going to talk about grief, a little bit about loss, losing a parent, and what that is like when you have a disability, if it's any different, or what it's like just talking about it. So, without further ado, hello, Drew. How are you?
Hello. Hi. How are you, Tiff? Good to see you again.
I know. It's really nice to talk to you again. I forget. I always forget what you sound like, so it's nice. It's nice to hear your voice.
Well, I like to say I sound sexy, and I think most people agree, right? Don't you guys out there, do you like this voice?
Yeah, you sound great.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you. And you kind of have this weird fusion of a California Southern accent thing going on, which I find a little bit, I don't know, strange, but it's cute.
Yeah, it's totally weird because, you know, if I really want to sound more like I sound like myself, this is probably how I sounded when I was about 14 years old. When I became a performer professionally, I had to change because there's not a lot of jobs. There's only specific jobs where you can sound rural. And the other thing is I'm bilingual, you know. I'm fluent in French, and we have a really strong tongue because of that.
So how did you become fluent in French, Drew?
Well, I started off in middle school. They offered it to us. I'm from South Carolina. I'm from Columbia, South Carolina. Right. I didn't know if I needed the...
Well, I think people out there would like to know what Southernness you are.
Columbia, South Carolina. Go Cox. I mean, the Carolina Gamecocks. We just won our second national championship in baseball last night against Florida.
That's
Carolina,
cool.
Go USC. And I started out in middle school. It was like when the public school system first offered a foreign language, and they gave you the choice of Spanish and French. Mm-hmm. And honestly, guys out there, the French teacher was just gorgeous. So I followed her. I mean, I was like 12 years old. I wasn't going with the old teacher that taught another language. I went with the young, beautiful teacher.
Nice.
And that's where my interest started. And it continued in college. I had to take some classes. And I just really, really loved it. I loved French films. I had no idea what they were saying, but I thought I want to be able to understand them. And so just on my own, I just kept working on it until today, you know. I'm probably operating at a pretty high proficiency level.
That's pretty cool.
You mean in French, and I'd be able to, you know, converse with you.
Yeah. Is it one of those things, like, I feel like I felt the same way about French, but I never had the dedication you did. I always have this dream to learn the language, but like you were saying, your proficiency is high, but probably not fluent because, right, you have to live there probably for a year. Isn't that required usually to get to that fluency kind of plateau?
I think so. I think I would need to be in Paris for a year, and then, you know, you would probably not know that I was American because, you know, I read, there's a great app I get on my iPhone. It's for Europe One, which is a great web radio channel. And I listen mm-hmm. to it daily, and I cool. read little shorts on it. And I have a couple really? Of other fun programs. One's like French slang when it's all curse words and romance, adult language. That's really fun to know. And then I've got one that's kind of like general, very formal French because, you know, if you don't use it every day, you're not going to be 100% fluent.
I know. And don't you feel kind of awful when you start forgetting certain words?
I don't know. It depends on how attractive the woman is I'm trying to impress. If she's really attractive, yeah, I'm like, okay.
That's funny.
Forgetfulness.
Well, why don't you say something in French that we've been talking about it? Say something. Say something awesome.
Qu'est-ce qui se passe avec vous? C'est là, par le monde. Moi, je suis très bête. Je suis ici aujourd'hui à Caroline du Sud. C'est ça. Ooh, Allô, salut, bye bye. There you go.
Oh, parfait. Mm-hmm. Great. See, I want to learn French, man. I think it's one of the sexiest languages. I don't know how sexy you sounded right there, though. You sounded kind of like maybe you were some drunk lower-class Frenchman somewhere.
Yeah, I did. You know, I was trying to be
very... I'm just teasing you, baby. It's cool. And I don't know. I think it's... Do you feel like... I know we kind of got off subject here with the whole French thing, but I think... Do you ever, like, use it as a way to, like, seriously pick up chicks, or are you just joking?
No, I'm 36 years old. I'm past pickup lines.
No.
But no, it's not really off subject, because one of the things I do as a voiceover actor, obviously, is play other characters that aren't like me.
Right.
And one of my skills, obviously, is I can sound like a French person with an American accent. And it's very easy for me because I already speak French. So this is how I learned how to speak, and it's very easy. So it's very, it's actually right on target with
That's
what
cool.
I do.
Do you use a French accent with some of your current projects that you're working on?
Absolutely not, but I'm always working on or have something in the back burner that I'm trying to do. And mm-hmm. like right now, the thing that I've really been working on, it's been a while since I've done my proper English, my very standard English accent. So for the past 3 days, I've really been in my voiceover studio practicing my English accent. Is what I have been doing, my French accent. And there's another character voice that I have been practicing, which I guess you could call it my old Chinese person, but James Hong, the actor, it was my role model for trying to learn his accent. So there you go, folks. You just got three quick samples of what I can do.
That Chinese one is good. I haven't heard that. I don't know many people that can do that accent. That's really good.
That was the hardest one.
Yeah.
Of all the things that I've learned recently or the past 14 years as a performer, that one did not come quickly. I sounded really stupid for a long time.
Did you have to watch a lot of Karate Kid movies and listen to Mr. Miyagi talk?
Well, Mr. Miyagi's Japanese.
Oh, sorry.
Karate Kid, they're in Japan, mm-hmm. and it's great because karate is Japanese, but kung fu is Chinese. So I thought it would be more relevant since my project had to do with kung fu, the animation project I was working on, to learn Chinese so that there had to be a character in there, but...
It's a good one.
I don't
one.
Have an episode where I go back or I've had to use it. But, it's like having a tool in your toolbox. You never know one day when you might be asked to pull that out, and it can save you and make you some money.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good to be learning. I've never stopped working at my craft. I never stopped learning. I remember when I first started,
mm-hmm.
I was hoping that one day, I'd arrive at that place. But you never really arrive. You're always kind of in a process of, mm-hmm. of improving and getting better. So
yeah, the whole idea of arriving is kind of a juvenile way of thinking. And not in a mean way, but as you get older, you kind of understand that more, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's not juvenile. It's just about experience.
Yeah.
If you think of it like this. When the S hits the fan, they come in and take care of problems.
Right.
A child or an adult who has lived long enough to see some things happen.
Right.
You know, if they're 6 years old, I've seen a lot and been through a lot of stuff. So I'm going to be the one who steps up and takes some charge.
When you got injured, did you have, like, any voices that from, like, meeting? You know, when you get hurt, you meet a lot of interesting people. Or did you have any voices that you decided to create because of your accident and people that you've met since then?
Oh, my God. It's so funny that you asked that. My dad and I have this wacky story. You know, my accident was in 2007. I was driving across the country. I had gone to Las Vegas to celebrate my 32nd birthday. And 2 days later, you know, I was halfway across the country driving across I-40.
Mm-hmm.
I got in a snowstorm about an hour outside of Amarillo, Texas.
Oh, man.
I don't remember anything
snow in Texas. Weird.
I spun around backwards, went through the median of the freeway, and came into the oncoming traffic where a semi, a big 18-wheeler truck, hit the back of the truck I was driving, and it, you know, crushed my neck.
Oh, my God.
Almost. Apparently, the story is it took 13 hours for them to get me to the hospital. They couldn't fly a chopper in, and I was out there, and I woke up in the hospital, and it's kind of like falling asleep and waking up, and like all of a sudden everything is different. It really was that fast of a transition, which was really, really frightening and you know, depressing and scary, and I was angry, and there was all that stuff going on. But to get back to your question, there was one dude who was really creepy, and he'd talk like this: "Hi, Drew, are you ready for your breathing treatment?"
What?
"It's me, Scott." I swear, this guy would come in and put this, this mask on me with this gas of some sort that apparently was helping me fight off an pneumonia that I had in my right lung.
Uh-huh.
And I said to my dad had gone somewhere. My parents came in and were there. You know, they flew in like the next day, and both my mother and my father were there kind of helping me for that month that I was in Amarillo, Texas, just stuck in the hospital. And I was like, "Dad, you cannot leave me in the room with this guy. He is so creepy." Dad sometimes will like come up to me and, "Hey, Drew." And we'll just start laughing around.
Well, so he was a roommate, or was he an actual employee?
He was a hospital. He was on the hospital staff, and his job was to get me this gas, this breathing treatment, where you breathe this gas that apparently keeps your lungs healthy. I don't understand. I don't know what it was, and I never really looked up to find out what it was out of curiosity. But he just stuck everywhere.
He sounds a little bit like Seth Green's character in Family Guy, the brother.
Yeah, I never tried to sound like him, but that's
it kind of sounds like it. I'm not saying but it sounds sort of like it. Well, that's cool. So I know you've been working on Redneck Ninjas, and I know you had a meeting with Disney like a couple weeks ago, and I'm dying to know how that went. So why don't you tell me now?
Well, it went really, really well. By the way, guys out there, what I do other than as a voiceover performer. After my wreck, I kind of had to learn. Before my wreck, I was a general actor. I was one of those thousands of actors that had migrated to Los Angeles with dreams, and I had worked my way into the Screen Actors Guild by doing extra work, like 99% of all actors do. The stories of making it big and so quickly are so rare. It's really like hitting the lotto.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always great if you're that person that gets. It doesn't have to go through the trials and errors and the ebbs and flows of entertainment like I have for 14 years.
Yeah.
But anyways, long story short, I was more of a general actor that kind of wanted to do everything. And after my wreck, I realized that there just weren't roles for quadriplegics.
Yeah.
And if there were roles, you know, the studios, when they commission a film, you know, they sell it by who's going to draw the audiences, because they invest a lot of money. And it's not like every picture makes a lot of money. You know, they might make a $40 million picture that makes $45 million at the box office, so they only net $5 million.
Yeah, and that's like nothing, right?
Not a whole lot when you're a studio. You know, you're kind of dependent on the Harry Potters that come once a year and do $700 million just at the box office. And that kind of, you know, when you're a major studio like Warner Brothers that does about $1 billion a year in movie sales, you know, more than 80% is usually one picture. It happened with Sony. God, I love going off subject. I do it.
Hey, at least you're good at it. I could just listen to you talk. You're like teaching me some stuff here. I love it.
No, it's like the southern. That's the very southern side of me. Is we don't get to the point straight. We like to meander.
Just give me some southern food while you're talking to me, and I'll be happy. So anyways, you were
how to perform again as a voiceover actor, and the thing that just clicked one day was all these years of auditioning. I kept ignoring the advice, which was create your own work. So boom, I opened up Unique Publications. You know, I got the LLC for it, did all the legal stuff to say, I'm now officially a company owner. Right. What I do is I started creating speculation or spec animation concepts, and that means they've got no proven market history. Most entertainment properties come from a book, a game, mm-hmm. a toy, something that has sold that already has a market and an audience. Mm-hmm. There's just too much money and too much risk to take on completely new ideas. You know, and that's why right now in like a bad economy, there's so many so many remakes and sequels.
I know, they're safe, right?
They're safe. And, you know, statistically, sequels and remakes do well. But as an audience and as, you know, a connoisseur of entertainment...
We get bored. I'm like, why are they bringing back Care Bears, you know? What the frack?
Yeah, why are they doing Footloose again? Really?
Oh, it's really so stupid.
Really care about Footloose? No, not really.
No.
Sorry, Julianne Hough, you're gorgeous. But, you know, I don't like dancing very much. Anyway, back to the point, Redneck Ninjas is my baby through Unique Publications,
mm-hmm.
and it's a story about a family. It's about family. There's six characters, and they all function as this awesome surrogate family where they all depend on each other, and they live in Folksville, and they mm-hmm. run into crazy outsiders that come through their town and people that live there, and they kind of serve as mm-hmm. like your foils and your villains to try to get in the way and stop them. And the Redneck Ninjas, they're the town's, they're the heroes. They're heroes.
And I have to say, before I let you continue, but my favorite ninja of all of the Redneck Ninjas, it's got to be the Cat Lady Ninja.
Well, she's actually one of the villains.
Oh, she's one of the villains. Oh, sorry. I didn't even notice that. So tell me how exactly the Cat Lady is a villain then, because she has cats?
Okay. She is, you know, my idea was like your typical, if you ever go to Miami Beach, you'll see like 70-year-old women in bikinis that have fake tans. They look like leather. They've got makeup on, and they actually come up and talk to you when you're a young man and are surprised that you're not attracted to them. Scary. That was my initial idea. I wanted this old cougar-esque woman and the idea came that her and Granny had a past, like a sullied past, a dirty past, where Granny was like, you are beautiful inside. You don't have to be beautiful on the outside. That's not really what's important. But the Cat Lady was this beauty pageant kind of very superficial woman who everything was on the external. And, you know, as she gets older and she no longer has that appeal, she turned dark mm-hmm. and wicked. And so she's always trying to get Granny neck, her last name, and get Granny's secret sacred recipe book that's got all these mystical serums and ointments and you know, lessons on how to channel your inner animal spirit. And the Cat Lady thinks that inside of Granny's recipe book is something that can make her young again. And so she's always trying to get it and steal it and stop the ninjas from being heroes. And you know, she's very feline-like, and she's got a really cool army of felines and two, like, main cool. minions. One's Nefertiti, who's your mm-hmm. sweet little innocent cat that's really bad, and, of course, mm-hmm. the devil cat, who's Butch, who's this weird-looking, psyched-out cat wearing latex and a spike collar.
That's awesome.
So, that was the initial idea.
Well, I'm sorry I got it mixed up, but the Cat Lady Ninja idea did sound kind of cool there for a second. Sorry.
Well, you know, hey, maybe one day in the future she'll have a niece.
Yeah, maybe she should. That would be like Batgirl or something, you know?
never know. God, I get off subject so quick. So anyways, after like 4 years of developing this, it really got to a point where it's really looking very commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to pick up management in Los Angeles through it. They really loved the concept. They loved the pilot script that I co-wrote with a great writer named Neo Edmund. Hey, Neo, if you're out there listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I got actually a meeting with the VP of television at Disney,
cool.
The director of original series at Cartoon Network, and I actually recently have now befriended Margaret Loesch, who is the CEO of the Hub Network owned by Hasbro.
Whoa.
And they love it. They all think it's great. You know, the challenge is finding the right home for it, and we're really hoping Cartoon Network just goes ahead and decides.
Oh my gosh, that would be so exciting.
Listen, everybody's going to love this thing. Just buy the thing.
Yeah, just take a risk. I mean, they don't have to commit to, like, that many episodes, it seems, nowadays. It seems like they do, like, these half series or half seasons. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, normally what will happen is if they're unsure, they'll commission, like, 7 or 8 minutes.
Right.
Like, and you produce that with the money and bring it back, and then they say, yay, and then they change a lot of things that they think is right about it, and then... You know, if it applies at that point, then they'll commission a full 22 minutes, and then if that works, then they'll go ahead and order a season of, like, 13 episodes.
Would your show ever want to be a little bit more raunchier than be, like, on the Adult Swim hour?
Definitely. When I first started, it was very subversive and very much adult. And then I realized very quickly the reason why I was doing that, deep down, folks, here it comes, the intimate, truthful moment. In a way, it's kind of like you're embarrassed. I come from South Carolina, and we're notorious for having sullied history. You know, I mean, nobody normally thinks of South Carolina as a place they really want to go because there's so many political and social issues that come out of here, which are historically pretty awful.
Yeah.
So in a way, it was kind of like, ooh, I didn't like that side of me. Then I realized, you know, the one thing as an actor you have to do is if you don't love your character, you really can't play it truthfully as full as possible because you're always going to have a reservation of, I don't want to go there because I don't like this character and I don't really like this role.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to love what you do.
Yeah.
And once I realized that, yeah, I'm not really quite in love with it yet, I fashioned it into more of something... it was completely opposite of that Adult Swim direction.
Okay.
And now, no, I have it very much tailor-made at this point to be a family show where, you know, definitely the target audience is boys 9 to 14. I want it to be action-filled.
Cool.
Think of the narrative or, like, the big main story that kind of goes through. It's going to attract the boys. But the humor is for men and women, 18 to 34 as well. I think of the older women, you know, those who have children that have children, 45 to 55. You know, Granny is a very strong character, and Miss Chicken is a very strong character.
Mm-hmm.
That are, you know, they're both females, and they're strong leads in this series. So I'm trying to attract male and female, men and women, boys and girls. So this can be a very family-friendly thing. I feel like that's where it's best suited, not the Adult Swim direction.
Yeah.
If they want to go in that direction, then I got to get off of it because I don't want to go in that direction.
No.
Maybe with something else I would, but now at this point, like, personally, I'd be like, oh, gosh. Okay, guys, buy it and, like, maybe take my name off.
Okay, so have you met with Cartoon Network at all, or is it just in the talks?
Yes. Yeah. When I went out, I went for a couple of days. May the tenth.
Yeah.
The tenth we went out and. On that next day, I had my meeting with first over at Disney Studios in Burbank, and then I went up into also in more like higher Burbank, which is up the hills when you go north. I went to Cartoon Network.
So
I met with their guys. You know, their guys that their job is to go, I like this or I don't like it, and they serve as the gateway that takes you to the executive of this. You know, so no, I met with them, and
That's awesome. Well, I hope they take a...
Love it.
I really... That would be so cool. So I hope that happens for you. When you met with them, did they at all, like... could you sense any uncomfortableness because of the wheelchair thing? Or, I mean, what's that industry? Like, they're probably pretty cool since they're all creative people, I imagine, right?
Yeah, the cool thing about Los Angeles is it's just like... let's say a mecca for all sorts of people from all over the world. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of used to seeing the different. And in animation, it doesn't have the egos like feature film does. Mm-hmm. And I like to describe it like this to people if I'm kind of doing a shorthanded entertainment. The job of feature films is obviously is to sell tickets and DVDs, but you only get two sales. The first one is at the box office, and the second is at... you know, the store to buy the DVD.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's sold twice. For television, television makes their money by having ad revenues. And you have to create a story that's like fifth and sixth sale. You want that repeat client that's going to come back every day and see what happens next.
Yep.
You kind of have to tailor your properties different. Basically, that's why a lot of the feature films are these big spectacles, you know, where it's explosions and violence and blah, blah, blah. And in television, you know, it's more of a mecca for writers, because mm-hmm. if you don't have good writing and a good, you know, story that keeps on going, you can't have people come for five, six seasons.
Right.
So back to the question, no, I had no trouble at all, mm-hmm. you know. I've kind of gotten over all that.
Well, I know that. You can get over it, but you can meet some new guy, and he might, like, can't even look you in the eyes, you know what I'm saying?
Well, the cool thing about this is, you know, I had their full attention.
Yeah.
But when I speak, I really try to engage and kind of make it a two-way thing, where instead mm-hmm. of talking at people, I tend to more have, like, a conversation.
Yeah.
Where... it comes back and forth, and that way I forced them to be engaged. But they seemed really, really excited about, you know, I mean,
good.
Come on, when you come in with something like Redneck Ninjas, there's only once in a while that you've had a name that immediately attracts attention.
Well, the name actually makes you laugh, because it's funny if you picture rednecks as ninjas in your head. Just think about it. It's pretty funny.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And that's the point. I mean, this is a zany world. This is not serious. This is humor, and that's really my forte. Is, you know, I guess you could say my MO in life is to, I really enjoy seeing people smile and laugh, and I wanted to make something that was as inclusive as possible. And that's one of definitely, mm-hmm. if there was any kind of different looks that they gave me, it was an unsurety if something rural would translate globally. Would it just be like something that would work domestically? Or could we sell this in China and France mm-hmm. and Italy? And so what I tried to do was minimize the rural
right.
and maximize global. You know,
good idea.
Now, you know, I live by my smartphone.
Yeah.
And 75% of the world now has a smartphone. I just saw Popular Mechanics, 101 of top inventions ever, and the smartphone is number one. It is so
really?
Connected.
What kind of phone do you have?
Well, I have an iPhone. I use iPhone 4.
Okay.
Love it.
Cool.
And because of that, you know, culture is sort of melding, where traditionally, like an Americana or a rural, you know, you've got those kids now. They're not just sitting at home and looking at the same things their parents did. You know, they're not necessarily sitting there, come on, boy, time for the banjo lessons. Oh, man. No, you know, they're connected globally. So you have to be inclusive. And so I tried to throw as many different ethnic and cultural gems as I could, so that the characters, okay, I got a surrogate family, you know, and I have a lead African-American character.
Yeah.
I've got an old woman. I've got a chicken. You know, they get their powers from Native American culture and Chinese culture. And, you know, so that was generally the idea, was really to try to be much more inclusive. So that,
have you tried to make a character with a disability, or did you feel like it was too cliche?
Great question. And at this point, you know, I just haven't, God, this is gonna, I'm going to sound like such a jerk, but I haven't been inspired to do it in this series.
Mm-hmm.
But in my next thing that I've been developing, which is called Hotel Firefly, mm-hmm. which is this musical with insect characters, I do have mm-hmm. a character that has a disability.
Cool.
And what's crazy about it is it's a lightning bug that's tail like does not just flash that neon, it flashes any color you want. But
cool.
he's seen as this oddball, and his job is to sit on top of the Hotel Firefly and to plug his little hiney, his rear end, into the broken Y, which does not light up, and he flashes it so that the Hotel Firefly says Hotel Firefly and not Hotel Fluff. And he likes to like make it all sorts of techno and crazy colors.
Sweet.
So people look at him like, okay, he's a little wacky. But he ends up finding a home, sort of like, well, not sort of like, in Atlantic City,
okay.
being a performer at a nightclub, doing all the lights at this club. He's like the lighting guy that mm-hmm. flashes his tail and makes all the cool light patterns and laser pattern shows for the dancers. But
cool.
I try to very slickly give him a disability. I have not put.
Well, so that's the disability. It's pretty sci-fi, though. It's cool.
It's cool, but you know, the idea was to kind of slip it in there so I'm not beating people over the head.
Right.
Be more inclusive.
Yeah, I suppose there's probably this fear. You don't want to be the wheelchair guy making the wheelchair comics. Like, the South Park guys did two fabulous disabled characters in their cartoon, and they also do a lot of Jewish characters, and they're Jewish. But I can see, though, you'd probably be worried, because then there's such a tendency for people in the community, or wheelchair community or whatever, for people, you know, you don't want to be too niche-y, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be too mushy, too sappy. You don't want to beat people over the head. You know, you understand, we've got that kind of weird position in life where mm-hmm. some people look at us and it's like, I'm just a guy trying to make my way. But to them, I'm like this great source of inspiration.
I know. Isn't that weird to be now you're inspirational because you're doing it all while you're sitting on your ass all day long? I'm like, sweet. Thank you.
Exactly. I mean, I'm a guy that didn't have a choice but to keep going.
Well, yeah, you have no choice. You have to keep going, you know?
Keep going, and I don't think I'm a hero. In fact, honestly, I think deep down I'm probably a jerk.
Yeah, I know.
Well, probably. I can be very jerky. So
yeah,
me. You know.
I can be. I can actually be a pretty huge bitch. So it's all. But you know what, though? It's hard having a disability, and you can't always be nice to everybody. Like, I used to be so happy when I was younger, even when I was early injured, and I finally gotten to this, like, top point where now that I'm going to be 32, gasp, I don't as nicely, like, I don't know, when someone comes up to me and wants to know what's wrong with me, or if someone tries to pity me, I kind of get bitchy now. I hate being that person, but sometimes I just don't have the patience.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and we're humans. You know, if you look at the world, we're all just people trying to get by.
Yeah.
We're all just trying to keep going and figure out what this life experience is. And we're not any different. But, you know, hey, if you want to look at me as a source of inspiration,
yeah.
by all means, please do.
And it's good. Because
a cartoon? Absolutely. Because I got to eat. And, you know, my cost of living is higher than the normal person, as is yours.
Yeah, it's annoying.
You have a lot more needs. You know, it takes a team of four people per week for me to live a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
So, I gotta feed five mouths, including myself.
Yeah, I always get the email every other day from someone on Facebook, or they go to my website. You're so inspirational. I'm like, that's awesome, and I really am flattered. But you know, that's, you see, as when you have the disability, though, it's a bit weird because you're like, well, I'm just living my life. I haven't saved a child from burning fire, or say, you know, passed out vaccines in India. But I guess I'm inspirational because. You can't imagine living my life, you know? I don't understand it, but you guess you just got to take it with a grain of salt. I don't know.
Yeah, but then on the other side is, yeah, we do have a lot more difficulties and challenges.
Yeah.
I mean, I lost my mother recently.
Yeah.
Actually, like 6 months after my accident, my mom went back, and she had been in remission for cervical cancer for about 30 years.
Oh, my gosh. And scary.
After my wreck, all of a sudden, peritoneal, which is in the same area, the peritoneal area is basically a membranous skin. skin-like layer that contains all your inner female organs and your bladder and stuff.
What?
And it develops there. They thought it was ovarian at first because, you know, it's down in that area. It kind of contains everything, but turned out it was actually the skin, and it metastasized.
Oh, no.
Spread, and, you know, she did rounds of chemo, and it finally got to the point where the chemo was kicking her butt so much, she was just like, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I'm ready for this, you know, to run its course.
Oh.
And so, you know, last month, you know, we've been about a full month there, you know, she finally passed. And it was very, very, very hard. One, because, okay, my accident happened when I was 32 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I moved out of my home when I was 18 years old, went to college, kind of took care of myself, and all of a sudden at 32 years of age, I got to move back in with my parents because I was not financially wealthy. I wasn't independent enough to be by myself. I had to be with my family, or it was going to be a state facility.
Right.
And I'm so glad that my parents took me in. And my mother was my primary caretaker for the first year.
Oh, man.
And it was very difficult because You know, we had a strained relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was not necessarily completely healthy, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't horrible. My mother was not an abusive person.
Mm-hmm.
It was mainly just like a difference in personality and faith and politics.
Oh, yeah.
And my mom wanted to change me, and I wanted to change her, and it just didn't work. But anyways, after her passing, you know, now I'm alone in my home here without having that person here to help me. She did it. She helped. And it's very difficult. I'm kind of like you in a way where you've lived independently for a while now, correct?
Yeah, I have. I have a team of about 1, 2, 3 different PCAs that helped me all week. And if it wasn't for them, you know, I would not be able to live on my own either. And it's all, you know, luckily I live in a state that pays for PCA services, and I can do that, you know. It was good. Thank God. My mom helped me, like, the first year I was injured. Not even. She didn't help me that. She didn't have the patience. She's not really a natural caregiver type, so. But it's a tough situation, and I know having your parents help you, it can always be a little bit awkward. But, you know, I was going to say, though, when you lost your mom, I bet you, I mean, were you there? I mean, did you know, obviously you knew it was going to come because she stopped the chemotherapy, but did you have an opportunity to kind of talk to her about your accident? I mean, I know I feel, like, really guilty sometimes about having my accident, make sure my mom, you know, you don't want to disappoint your mom. Was there any kind of talk like that before she passed?
I had lots of talks with her, and one of the things I did not tell her was, in some weird kind of way, because they say that stress can induce cancer, I felt a little tinge of guilt, like my situation caused her cancer to come back.
Oh.
Absolutely ridiculous notion, I know, but, you know, I carried that guilt for a while. I didn't have to talk to her about it because I kind of realized that I was just you know, being ridiculous. But we talked about a lot of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, my mom said, "I'm very proud of you. I've always known that you would be great at what you do, and I could not be more proud. You're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not going to have any problem without me.
Yeah.
I want you to be happy. I want you to," this is very personal. She said, "You know, I want you to be understanding because your father's still going to be alive, and
he's
the opportunity to potentially date again, and you're going to have to accept that."
Oh, yeah.
And kind of the strange thing is, when she first came and told me she was going to stop chemo, I'm sitting on the front porch and she's working, and she came, "Drew, I got to have a talk with you." And I was like, "Oh, this knot in my stomach."
Oh. Yet.
And she's like, "I want you to be understanding when your father starts dating again." And I'm like, whoa.
Wow.
You need it. I mean, that came out of nowhere. It's like, that's what you say when you're just about to leap off the plank into the shark-infested water. You don't say that, like, when they're untying you or walking to it. You know, I was
just,
I'm going to pop chemo, and this is going to happen. But no, she came with me at that approach first, and I was like,
oh, man.
What the heck is that, Mom?
How old was she when she passed away?
My mom was 63 or 64 years old.
Only 54?
No, 63.
64.
I can't remember the specific.
Well, that's, so, yeah, that's weird. That's really weird. She was probably just, I think it'd be hard for anyone to, you know, knowing, if she was your parents really close to each other? They have a good marriage?
Actually, you know, I come one of those weird families that don't exist anymore, the American nuclear family, where my parents have been together for 45 years.
Oh.
And they're very close, and she's definitely struggling. He's having a hard time. Because they didn't know they were together. You know, I'm 36 years old. I didn't even love myself until I was 30. Imagine being married for 45 years. I'm not the kind of person who was ready to settle down like that.
No.
You know?
Yeah, no. It's interesting. You don't see that. But, so, and now it's kind of slightly changed the subject because I wanted to talk about this with you. And it kind of relates maybe to stuff you wanted to see your mom, have your mom see you do before she passes. You know, was to maybe be settled down and have a wife. I'm sure she wished, hoped that for you. I mean, I know deep down parents feel like they want to see that with their kids before they die. I mean, I know you've been, like, dating and stuff, and has your mom, when she was alive, was she kind of there as, like, your person to talk to when you were dating stuff after your injury? Did you have someone like that to kind of, you know, get advice from, another a female perspective?
Well, you know, honestly, no, because, you know, my mother was a very, very traditional, conservative Christian woman. And me, I'm agnostic. You know, I don't think that anybody really knows definitively what God is, if it's even there. You know, I can't say God doesn't exist, but I definitely can't say God does exist.
Yeah.
This is what he wants you to do, and this is how. Well, I don't think anybody really knows that. And so when it came down to relationship, my mom and I did not mesh that way, but I did talk to her definitely that, you know, it really bummed me out that, you know, if I ever had children, they would never get to see a grandma.
I know, isn't that, it's sad, it sucks, but, you know, so do you want to have kids one day? Do you foresee yourself as a dad?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, not right now, but absolutely, and I hope within the next 5 years, honestly, that I do, you know, that's kind of like in my five-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those compulsive people that puts things down in a calendar, and I'm like, I'm going to do this by this, by this point, and that's the five-year plan to be a dad. Yeah, I'm going to be a kick-ass dad.
Yeah, you will be.
Pretty freaking awesome. I mean, I'm great with kids, always have been. Part of my talent is that ability to tap into that inner child and go to those kind of juvenile places and just be free and not be afraid of judgment and just play.
Yeah.
And definitely my profession kind of gives me an edge in a way where I'm able to relate really well with kids.
Have you done any internet dating sites to try to, have you had any experience doing internet dating since you've been hurt?
Yeah, most of my dates have come from social profiling, like MySpace and Facebook.
Really?
Back in the day, but definitely now. And it's because, you know, I'm kind of like going back and forth between my home here in South Carolina and Los Angeles, you know, trying to work. And while I'm here in South Carolina, obviously, when I'm working so much, you know, I'm not going out to a bar to meet somebody. I'm going to find somebody online during the day and then maybe go out and meet them later. And, yeah, I mean, I've had lots of dates. Actually, this past year, I've been not in a drought, but I've been so focused on my career, I haven't dated as much. But recently, I've been going out. Hard thing is, at 36, a lot of people are married or they got kids or they already have a boyfriend.
I know, it's not easy. Plus, I bet you in South Carolina, there's not a lot of singles down there where there's more families and stuff.
Not at all. So, without going into intimidating myself, I have to steal other guys' women. I want love time.
So what have you noticed, you know, since you've been, you know, you have spinal cord injury and you're, you know, dealing with women and, you know, it's women are an enigma wrapped in a question. I know this, but what have you felt like how women treat you and, you know, and how are you kind of dealing with your new situation, you know, when you're dating and like, you know, people misjudge you, you know, before they get to know you or that kind of thing. Do you have like any kind of tips or methods you've learned to kind of combat that?
Well, I'll say two things. One, you know, my spinal cord injury happened when I was adult. I had 32 years of able-bodied life.
Mm-hmm.
And post-spinal cord injury, yes, women treat me completely differently.
Mm-hmm.
Before, when I walked into a room, women, without an ego, you know, women responded to me. And I like to think I took women's breath away. There was like a side thing where they were interested in me.
Yeah.
As a man, in like an Eros type way. They saw me and were like, okay, wow, mm-hmm. I wanna talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I roll into a room, people either don't quickly want to look at me or they look at me as a friend.
Right.
Friendly kind of way. They don't see me as someone who is capable of Eros, who
or,
is worthy of them. So
yep.
I have to work a whole lot harder to change their mind. Yeah. And, you know, I guess, whoa, pity me. Now,
hey, it's
I'm not just a pretty boy with a nice body. Now I actually have to have a personality and charm the hell out of
You could totally roll into a bar one day in the future and knock some ladies' socks off just by looking at you. It happen. I can do it by rolling into a bar. Why can't you? You know, it's all about how you carry yourself, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, like, on the web, initially, women are kind of, like, iffy about me.
Mm-hmm.
When they meet me in person and I kind of assert myself,
mm-hmm.
it takes a couple of minutes, but then I'll notice a shift where mm-hmm. all of a sudden they're looking at me as a human being and not as a person as a chair.
Nice.
And that's been partly my natural personality. I've always kind of been an outgoing, assertive person.
Yeah.
And that definitely helped me in my transition. But now, you know, Tiffany is absolutely essential. I don't make people pay attention to me,
yeah.
And it's not like you're an attention whore.
Right.
It's like, you got to see me, and you got to realize that because I'm driving my wheelchair with my head, I have a array system.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with my brain. There's nothing wrong
yeah.
with me. I just have a broken spinal cord. And,
yeah.
you know, my body does not look the same way. But I'm still a person, and I'm capable of performing behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still adequate, and I'm worthy of that. It
right.
takes a lot more work.
It takes a lot more work, and it takes, and I think you have to, you have a lot, I think the people out there that would treat you the way that you deserve to be treated, you know, in a, as a person in a wheelchair, I know this too, is that the numbers are less, so it takes longer to meet the right person, because you just, it takes a very good, not even a good person, just a, I don't know, I hate to even use the word progressive, but it takes a special kind of person too. Totally date someone with a disability, and you know, and I think that, you know, it can take years, but I don't think, you know, I always see people eventually meeting someone. It just takes, it can take a long time, and that's the hard part, you know, is the
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the message is, if I can give a great positive message to put on your show here,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, because I had 32 years in the able-bodied world, love is hard to find for everybody.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, you're lucky if you have a family like I do that loves you, that really knows and loves you.
Mm-hmm.
There are people out there that don't have a mother and a father that ever loved them.
No.
They don't have anybody that really cares about them. So love itself is a hard thing to find. Now, able-bodied, it was much easier to find somebody that was willing to just fool around if you had the equipment that they liked.
Right.
They preferred.
Hookups.
They're interested in just hooking up with you. Unless they're those creepos that are fetishy, you know, that are like, they actually like people that are that have disabilities, or they prey on the people with disabilities.
Those people don't count.
It does happen. I get some weirdos that come around. And then people that assume that I'm desperate.
Oh, I know.
Moment, yeah, because we all crave love. But I'm not a desperate person.
Yeah.
I love me enough that I know I'm worthy, and eventually it'll work itself out. But yeah, you do have to find somebody that sees you and is willing to look past those things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not somebody you have to train. It's somebody that kind of already has that. You know, I find
exactly.
that when I meet somebody, if I have to do a lot of training, I know it's not going to last.
No. Yeah, I'm just like their experiment. No, I once went on a date with a guy, and I knew he would never be cool with my wheelchair when we were out at a grocery store, and he asked me, no joke,
Are you going to borrow one of those grocery carts to go around the store in? I was like, why would I use the grocery cart that you can rent, the electric, like, scooter cart, when I have my own power chair? And I looked at him, and that was the dumbest question. And I'm like, if he doesn't know this right now, he's a complete idiot. I can't train this guy. It's funny. So,
I mean, wow, what a jackass.
I know. Have you tried eHarmony.com?
No. I don't have the time because I really do work about 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. 90% of my job is networking.
Dude, you could still work and go on the internet and date. It's not impossible.
Say that again.
You could still go on eHarmony and work. What are you talking about, Willis?
You're right. Okay, so I'm just being lazy.
Yeah. I'm just curious if you like the website or not, because that website can be really jerky, and they'll reject people sometimes if you have a disability. That's why I was asking.
Well, I actually got on eHarmony before my accident.
Yeah.
And I found that it did work for me just exactly where
really?
I was. Really? So I was like, No.
Well, that's cool. You know, I know that, you know, this is like one of those subjects, dating. You know, we don't want to get too personal, but I'm glad you shared some of your stuff with me. It's one of those things. I'm always trying to get everyone's dating experiences when they're on the show, because I think people out there love to hear other people's miseries and they don't feel like they're as lonesome. Just kidding. But, you know, I had my friend Sean on the show, who's also a quad, and I had dedicated a whole show to just dating issues and from the male wheelchair perspective. And so, you know, it's interesting. But thank you. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, people out there that are looking for misery, who is me? I have those moments.
So, if people out there want to check out your work, where can they go?
Well, I'm on Facebook as Unique Drew Bates, because my company's name is Unique Publications, LLC.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the one in California that is at a publications house.
Mm-hmm.
Unique Publications does not have a separation between Unique and Publications.
Okay.
Easiest way, guys, go to www.drewbates.com,
mm-hmm.
and I have links all over the web to find me. I'm kind of like a little bit everywhere.
And people will be able to, is there any video of Redneck Ninjas to watch, or is there only screenshots?
Actually, yeah, I just finished with Powerhouse Animation there in Austin, Texas. That was the production house that I used to create the intro to the pilot episode of Redneck Ninjas.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to my website, www.drewbates.com, there's a section, there's several links that take you, and you can click on the YouTube emblem,
mm-hmm.
and I have the 54-second intro on the web. I just put it there 2 days ago, and I'd love feedback from people. Like, yeah,
right.
It's great or not, I hate it. I like both, honestly. I really like honest feedback.
All right. Well, I hope that your show gets picked up by Cartoon Network. That would be super exciting, so I'll be watching for that.
Well, if it doesn't, the world is not seen to end of me, so I'm going to do what we always have to do.
Yep. All right, babes. Well, I got to let you go. We are up on time, but thank you so much for being on the show. You're awesome. And, yeah, good luck out there in the dating minds.
Love it. It's great to talk to you again, you beautiful girl.
Thank you, baby. All right, talk to you soon. Bye.